Talk about not looking at women. How can you possibly go through and not look at women? Matter of conditioning, matter of training. You have some good days, some bad days. But if you're working at it, eventually it becomes natural. The next mitzvah is more or less a continuation. 236 is the prohibition to speak rechilus. Now remember, we defined rechilus is a form of Lashon Hara, which is the most wicked form of Lashon Hara. A rachil is the literal translation of a rachil is a peddler. A peddler is somebody who goes around from place to place peddling his wares. The classic example of a rachel in the laws of Lashon Hara is when you tell me something about somebody. That's standard, that's straight Lashon Hara. You tell me that Tom has messy handwriting. That's Lashon Hara. You've told me something derogatory about somebody else. I go to Tom and I say, Tom, do you know that John told me that you have messy handwriting? To go and tell somebody else that someone said something to me about him, that's rechilus. Because that creates the cycle of hatred. Because then he's going to come to him and say, you know what, John, Kaplan told me that you told him that I have messy handwriting. And then he's going to come back and say, hey, Kaplan, why did you tell him that I told you that he has messy handwriting? And then all you end up creating is a triangle of hatred. That is the most wicked form of Lashon Hara. That's called rechilus. A rachel is a peddler who goes peddling his wares from place to place, trying to stir up animosity.
Can I say a story on that?
Yeah, sure.
This might be maybe use that. When we were in the States, when you have one of the phone, when we were growing up, one of the phone things that you could get on your phone from the phone company, they would say it was called a three-way party line. Now, the idea of this was, I could call you. You and I would be having a conversation, and then I could put you on hold, dial somebody else, and the three of us could all suddenly, three different homes have a conversation. A couple of these people together, you get like 5, 6, 7 people on the same phone all different places. But, of course, what do you do with this when you're in junior high school? Your favorite trick is, you and your friend are talking, and you call up the third person, and the other guy doesn't say anything. And the third person doesn't know that there's somebody else listening, and you start talking with that guy about the other one that's on the phone listening.
That's beautiful. That's
beautiful.
It's
like instant.
Hey, that's gorgeous. Oh, I missed my calling. I graduated junior high school too early. No, that would be wonderful. That is not only rechilus. That's beautiful. I think that. I mean, right? I mean, why not just give the guy a gun and tell him to shoot somebody? That's also shtick. That's beautiful. What I don't understand, what I never understood about that is why these great philosophers want to get together on the phone and talk to each other. Well, just get together in person. Why, if you're on the phone and it's costing you 50 cents a minute, that makes it so much more exciting. But you're right, that is absolutely rechilus, right? Not only that, you're instantaneous. Oh, that's gorgeous. I got to remember. In front of the other person, you're embarrassing him, you're humiliating him, then he finds out. And then the guy always, of course, when the third person starts talking, I'm sure the second person says, oh, I didn't mean it, I was only joking. Yeah, we know, you meant it. You said it. Yeah, I knew you were there. You said it. If you do it for the good of the other person, even though that's hard to imagine how it's for his good in such a way, but if you do it for the good, so theoretically it's permissible. But you'd have to be awfully certain it's for the good.
What if kids do something bad and you tell their parents?
All right, so there you're allowed to tell. That's like any Lashon Hara, which is for a beneficial purpose. But in order to say Lashon Hara when it's for a beneficial purpose, that is a beneficial situation. You have to make sure that you've got no personal benefit in telling them. We're going to talk today about rebuke if we get there. Hopefully we're going to get there. Okay. 237 is the prohibition. You must not stand by idly while your fellow man is going to be killed, is going to die or is going to be killed. That means that if, so you see, your fellow man is drowning or he is, if we remember we spoke about being mauled by a bear or he's being beaten up by thugs, whatever it is prohibition to stand there and not save his life. You have an obligation to get involved and make every attempt to save him. The only thing is that the posts can say, the halachic authorities say as follows, what if I know I'm going to get killed saving him? Remember we spoke about that? The guy is surrounded by five guys with machine guns. Right? So what can I possibly do? If I'm going to try to break in and try to save him, right? So we're both goners. There the halacha says you don't do it. Right? However, I want to read you a direct quote. The halachic authorities say as follows. One must even do it if he is in a chance of entering danger, because the other one is certainly in danger. That means even if you're at a risk that you yourself may end up getting killed, you still have an obligation, because by you it's only a risk, whereas by him it's a sure thing. Right? Now you have to make a judgment about whether it's a sure thing. If some guy is drowning in water and he's surrounded by sharks, right? I mean, the best you could do under those circumstances is ask him for his old baseball glove that he's in his car, right? There's no reason to jump in and try to save him. All you're going to do is give the sharks an appetizer. You have no chance whatsoever of saving, right, Richard? Right? Sharks don't take kindly to humans trying to save other human beings, right? You're a goner. However, the halachic authorities say one should not be too medactic. The English word for medactic is too. Don't think too much on whether he's in a chance of danger, because then you'll always find a way out. That means that if somebody's in a dangerous situation, you could always find a way to say, no, I better not try to save him because I'm going to be in danger too. Right? The authorities say it's an interesting point in halacha. Don't think about it too much. Right? If it's obvious that it's suicide for you, then don't do it. But the authorities say don't think about it too. You'll always find a way. That means somebody's in a house that's burning. I don't want to go running into the house to try to save him, because there's no way I'm going to make it out either. Right? Don't think about it too much. Right? If you know for a fact you can't make it out, then it's forbidden for you to go. But if there's a chance you could save him, the child's in a house, Chas v'Shalom, there's a chance you could save him, you have to take that chance. You're required to take that chance. You could not stand by. To stand by idly means you are standing by. The verse in the Torah is, you must not stand on your brother's blood. Those are the words in Hebrew. Lo samod al dam re'acha. Do not stand on your brother's blood. Meaning, do not stand by idly while his blood is being spilled. Yeah, question.
If you see someone who's drowning or whatever, and you make a judgment, an honest judgment in your opinion that you can't save him, and if you do, then you also be killed, whatever. And really, you could have saved him. Are you chayav bin hashamayim?
Yes. If you're well,
even if it was an honest judgment.
If it's honest judgment, then you're never accountable. Right, it's a judgment call, and you really genuinely made a judgment trying to set aside your biases, the major bias being that you want to stay alive, right? And you set aside that bias, and you just made a judgment call, and your judgment looked like there are a lot of judgment calls in halacha. You know, we had when the law, somebody's trying to kill you. So what's the halacha? You're allowed to kill them first. Somebody's breaking into your house, right? Somebody's breaking into your house, and you don't know who it is. It's the middle of the night. Halacha is you can smoke them. Right, because you're you know, you don't have to say, excuse me, are you planning to kill me or just to take my money? You don't have the chances are that he's going to kill you. The Gemara says you have a right to kill him first. Right, however, the halacha requires that under those circumstances, if you could, you don't shoot to kill. Right, try to injure him rather than kill him. If you could have injured him and instead you chose to kill him, then you're accountable. You're as a murderer. However, you can't stand there you've got to make a judgment, right? I don't know. You're not to do anything that's going to put your own life in jeopardy. So if this guy's coming into my house, and I take a look and I think to myself, okay, let's see, can I kill him or I can't kill him? Should I shoot him in the knee? Excuse me, can you pull up your pants for a second? I want to get you right in the knee, right in your shoe. In the meantime, he's pulling out his hatchet, right, or his axe, right, and he takes you out. The halacha is that you should not do that. Halacha is, do you know that there was a cop here in Israel that was killed? I think it was about 3-4 years ago. There was an Arab on the street who pulled out a knife. So I told you, the laws in this country are a little bit strange. If an Arab pulls a knife on a Jew, and a Jew pulls out a gun and shoots him, the Jew goes on trial for not having fought him with an equal weapon. Right? You cannot just pull out a gun and shoot him so easily. There was a cop. There was an outrage when this happened. Because the reason the cop didn't shoot, there was a cop who got killed. There's an Arab who had pulled out a knife. I remember it was a very, very long knife. He had stabbed someone already, and I don't remember if the other person died. The cop tried to take the knife away from the Arab and ended up getting killed. Right? And the reason he got killed was he didn't want to pull out the gun and just shoot him. Because he felt that it's better to try to make an attempt to disarm him without killing him. Right? And he ended up getting himself killed. Right? So according to halacha, if there's even a chance, the guy's still got a knife in his hand, right? You gotta kill him. Right? Because if there's even a chance that your own life is in danger, then you must kill him to save your own life. Okay.
What if?
Yeah. Question. Yeah. Go ahead.
If there is a chance that your life will be in danger, but there's only a chance, and you don't go, is it the same severity as that there is no chance of you getting killed and you don't go?
Probably not. If there's no chance of getting killed and you don't go, then you're much more accountable. Over here, at least, it's been understood you were afraid of dying. The other way, you're not afraid of dying, so why did you get involved? And that's just, you just watch while another Jew guy. All it takes is for you to throw him a rope while he's drowning. Right? All you got to do is throw him the rope while he's drowning. Right? And you don't throw him the rope, so you're not a murderer according to halacha, but you're guilty of a very severe crime. Right? Your life wasn't in danger. What would it have taken? If your life is in danger, so then we can understand you were afraid. It's understandable. You should have done it, but it's understandable. But you didn't get involved. Why didn't you get involved? Why didn't you throw him the rope? That's very severe. Yeah, Everett?
What if you are in a country, or all the countries are there, there's a secular law which opposes the halakhic law? And say it's in a case maybe with life involved or something like that.
Forgive me, can you give me an example?
I don't have any.
Do you mean like in this country where you have to pull it, where you're not allowed, where you must fight with an equal weapon?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. According to halacha, the halacha is that you have to defend your life. If you fulfilled halacha and the laws of the country don't agree with halacha, so then you'll have to contend with it afterwards. Right? Remember, a person is not allowed to give up even all his money. A person must give up all his entire fortune to not transgress a halacha. Right. So if the law in the country over here is no, I must. If objectively I know my life is in danger, you know that there's a law in this country. If a bunch of Arabs surround your car and start throwing stones at your car, right? So the law in the country is that until you are in imminent danger of your life, you're not allowed to use a gun. Right? You know that. And if you do, even a shoot warning shot, then at least you have a trial. And if you actually shot at somebody, then you're in big trouble. According to Torah, that's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous by Torah law. By Torah law, huh? No, it's on the law in the book. It's absolutely ridiculous. By Torah law, do you think that a rock could kill somebody who's driving a car? A guy, an egghead bus is traveling at 60 kilometers or 80 kilometers an hour, and somebody on the side of the road, a youth, is going to take a rock and hurl it at the bus. Do you think that it hasn't happened in this country where a driver's gotten hit and the bus goes out of control? You think he's not only endangering one life, he's endangering dozens of lives, right? So what do you think the Torah would require under those circumstances? The Torah would require that if you have an opportunity to kill. You must do what the Torah says. You must do what the Torah says. You must do what the Torah says, and then you have to pay the consequences based on secular law, and you'll be rewarded for suffering for the sake of the Torah. They say the stipler. Remember I told you about the stipler? The stipler, when he was in the Russian army, there was some incident that took place where he refused to do something on Shabbos, right? And as a result, they made him run the gauntlet, right, where they would line up the entire platoon of Russian soldiers, all of whom had one thing in common, they're all anti-Semites, right, and they would line it up, and he has to go run through the whole bunch, each one of them is holding some type of wooden paddle, and as he walks, goes through the whole bunch of them, they tag him as he runs through, and the stipler had to run through this gauntlet, and he ended up, you know, bleeding and bruised at the end of it. And he said later that rarely in his life has he felt the type of pleasure he felt when he was running that gauntlet. Because for that stretch, while he was running the gauntlet, he was suffering for the sake of Torah. Right? To suffer for the sake of Torah is a tremendous merit. When a person is suffering, you should know, there's a rule in general. Any mitzvah that, I don't think you would say, please fellas, hit me a couple more times. It means enjoying it, meaning that if you put it in the proper perspective, any type of suffering for Torah, for God, is priceless. If a person is any mitzvah, you should know, any mitzvah that you're doing, they usually use this this is associated with charity collecting, that if you're collecting charity, and once in a while somebody gives you a hard time, you go and knock on somebody's door asking for a donation, guy says, why don't you guys stop collecting and don't bother me, and anyway, you're all probably by stealing the money, who knows what you're doing with it, and you're insulted and you're abused because you're doing a mitzvah, that's when you're really racking up the reward, right? At the point that you're suffering for a mitzvah, at that point, the levels of the reward don't compare it to when you're doing it under comfortable circumstances. And that's why I say when you're learning Torah also. If you're learning Torah, let's say you have a headache, you get much more reward than when you're learning Torah and you feel good. Because anything, any sacrifice that you put in to serve God is unlimited reward.
Yeah. If you do say 16 hours a day, you're tiring yourself out, so that's the kind of suffering. So
that's all part, right? Right. It doesn't mean you should take and make yourself suffer. It doesn't mean you should do something.
Yeah, then you will all night and then try yourself.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings, we say a prayer every day. We say, please Hashem, don't put us into a situation of test. We're not interested in being put in a situation. There are enough tests in life without us going and maybe creating our situation of test. Okay.